A video version of this podcast is available at AboundingJoy.com and also on our YouTube pages. Well, hey kids, thanks for joining me again today in this Veritas 2020 video. As you continue to work your way through these Veritas 2020 videos, which I hope you're doing, I want to take just a little bit of a break and consider what we've been doing in this series. Let's back off just a little bit and think about the concept. We've been studying a subject that usually goes by the name of Christian apologetics. You may have heard me use that term from time to time, Christian apologetics. I think I may have mentioned the name of J. Warner Wallace to you before. I'm not sure, but I think I have in one of these videos. But if you're interested in digging a little deeper into these kinds of things, which I hope some of you are, I strongly recommend you consider some of J. Warner Wallace's books. And he's also got some great internet resources as well. J. Warner Wallace. I personally believe that he's doing a wonderful job in our day communicating these kinds of things, and especially to younger people. You might find his podcast interesting. I think you'd find his books, two of them in particular, Cold Case Christianity and God's Crime Scene, to be very, very helpful if you're interested in digging a little deeper. J. Warner Wallace is a former atheist. At one point, he did not believe in God at all. He was a cold case murder investigator from the Los Angeles Police Department. And he became a follower of Christ after, guess what? Studying the kind of things we've been talking about here in this Veritas series. And now, he is an extremely effective Christian apologist himself. The reason I bring him up right now is instead of calling it Christian apologetics, J. Warner Wallace has another name for it. He likes to call it simply Christian casemaking. Christian casemaking. And I think to a lot of people, maybe to you, that communicates better what we're trying to do. And it's partly because of the confusion over the word apologetics in our day, because it's kind of changed its meaning, I guess. I think in our seminaries, it's still normally called Christian apologetics. I'm pretty sure it is. By the way, again, the truth is, way back in the dinosaur age, when I was in seminary, you know, I graduated from Southwestern Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. It was in the early 1970s. Let me just give you a little bit of perspective of how long ago that was. I graduated from Southwestern Seminary several years before the current president of the seminary, who happens to be Adam Greenway, was even born. Yeah, we're talking ancient history. It's hard for me to wrap my brain around that. Anyway, if we had any courses at all in apologetics, I was not aware of it. Now, I'm not saying there weren't any. There may have been some. It just wasn't on my radar screen, at least at the time. I didn't hear anybody talking about it. I just didn't think about it being that necessary. In those days, it seemed like all anybody had to say, at least in my circle, was, you know, the Bible says, and then you quote scripture, and almost everybody we talked to, whether they were Christians or not, they knew what that meant. It meant God said it. It's pretty well understood and accepted. But the times have changed, of course, haven't they? Oh yeah, big time. And now, our seminaries not only have courses in apologetics, our seminaries have degrees in Christian apologetics. Because it's absolutely essential in the day we're living in now. It's not optional, guys. Let's remind ourselves again, the word apologetics does not mean we're apologizing for what we believe. You understand that, don't you now? We're not saying, okay, we feel kind of guilty about this, and we're kind of ashamed of this, so we'll apologize before we... No. That's not what we're talking about at all. It has a totally different meaning. It comes from a Greek word, apologia, which simply means a defense of the faith. There's a pretty famous Greek lexicon out there called Thayer's Greek Lexicon. It defines apologetics or apologia in the Greek as a reasoned statement or argument. It implies setting forth reasons, presenting evidence that explains how we know what we believe and what we teach is true. The word is used by Paul in Philippians chapter 1, verse 17, where Paul says, I am set for the defense, and there's the word, apologia, for the apologia of the gospel. It's also the same word Peter uses in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. We've seen that one before. I've used that several times. We call that our theme verse. But in your hearts, regard Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense. There it is, apologia, defense, to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that's in you. Let me say just one more thing right now. It's important, so stay tuned here. Just because I put all these video presentations together and share them with you like this, that doesn't mean I consider myself to be an expert in apologetics. I'm definitely not an expert. This is important. Now, stay with me. I've done a little reading. I've done a little study in apologetics. But I'm a learner just like you. I may be, a little bit ahead of you, but not that far. The point is, this is important. We don't have to be experts, guys, to talk about this stuff. All of us Christians need to be prepared to talk about this stuff. All of us need to be able to answer some of these basic questions that unbelievers ask. 1 Peter 3:15 is not just for a special class of Christians. It's for all of us. It's for you. And what I've been trying to do in this series of videos is kind of maybe be a translator of the few of the things that I've read for students and adults that are in my little world, my sphere of influence, you might say. And the truth is, there are many other issues and many other sources of evidence we could talk about than we've talked about. I've just focused on some of the things that the Lord's put in my life or He's used in my life to help me personally. You know, it made a lot of sense to me. It seemed to me would help an honest skeptic take a more serious look at God and at God's Word and God's truth. But guys, there are many questions in the field of apologetics that I guarantee I would not be able to answer, especially not off the top of my head. I might go find some answers. Now, this is important. I'm saying that to say this. Don't be afraid of questions. Don't be afraid that people will ask you something you won't be able to answer. There's nothing wrong with you or me or anybody else saying, you know what? That's a great question. And I don't feel like I've got a very good answer for it right now. How about if you give me some time to study it, okay? Let me think about it a while. I'll get back with you. Does that work? Meanwhile, if you've got some thoughts you want to share about it, hey, I'll be willing to listen. I can be a good listener. That's so important for us to have that attitude. It helps you relax a little bit. You see what I'm saying? You don't have to have all the answers before you talk with people about these things. And by the way, even if you've got some answers, when we run into people who have different worldviews from ours, listening is really, really good. It's healthy. It's very helpful on several levels. And there are a couple of really good questions that can take us a long way toward being good listeners and understanding where people are coming from. One of them, and again, you can use different words here for these questions, but one of them is, what do you mean by that? Or maybe you could say, could you please elaborate on that a little bit? Or could you explain where you're coming from just a little bit more for me? I don't understand exactly all that you're saying here. I want to make sure I'm hearing you right. You know, some variation of that kind of thing. Because when we use this question, what we're doing is inviting people to talk some more. Elaborate. Tell me what you believe. Give me a little more detail here. I want to listen. We don't need to jump to conclusions just because they've said a few words. Let me give you an example maybe of why that's important. For example, if someone tells us they don't believe in God, and we say, hey, okay, that's interesting to me. What do you mean by that? Tell me about this God that you don't believe in. And when they start telling you, and you listen closely, sometimes you realize, whoa, they're not talking about the God of the Bible. This is a caricature of the true God. And we might even be able to say to them, well, listen, you might be interested to know that I don't believe in that God either. So we don't need to assume some wrong things about people. It's good to take time to listen to them a little bit. Make sure we understand where they're coming from. And there's a follow-up question to that question. It's also very helpful. It's this. How did you come to your conclusion about that? Or how did you come to believe that? Would you be willing to share with me a little of your pilgrimage, your personal journey that led you to that belief? And again, it gives them a chance to talk. And there's something good about that, something healthy about that. Most people want to talk, but it forces them to think too. You know, it kind of puts the monkey on their back. I mean, you understand all the way through here, I've been talking about how important it is for us to have answers to their questions. But hey, that works both ways, doesn't it? I mean, it is important for us to be able to defend what we believe. But they have a worldview too. It may be different from ours, but they've got one. And sometimes it's good for us to kind of put the spotlight on them a little bit instead of on us, and let them back that up with evidence if they can. A lot of them can't do that, but they can talk about it a little bit. By the way, those two questions, what do you mean by that, and how did you come to that conclusion? I think it's the way he words them. Those two questions form the backbone of a really good book by a man named Greg Kokel. I don't know if you've heard of Greg Kokel or listened to him. He's got podcasts. But his book's called Tactics. And he talks about asking good questions. So if you haven't seen that book, it's worth reading too. You might want to check that one out. But we can learn a lot, guys, about a person's spiritual needs just by asking a couple of questions and then being patient and listening. But the point I'm making here is none of us can claim to be perfectly equipped to answer any and every question that should ever come up. None of us have all the answers, guys. But I do believe that we need to have at least some answers. You know, we need to learn some of these things that I've been talking about at Veritas, to some of the most common questions that non-believers commonly have. We want to help them. We want to help them find the truth. We want to help them see the truth. So we can all discipline ourselves to be better equipped to obey 1 Peter 3:15. We all need to work on that. But none of us are going to be perfect, okay? Be patient with yourself. So let me underline this. What I'm doing in this Veritas series is I'm just trying to share some of the information that is particularly significant to me personally. I mean, these are things that as I read and studied and thought about it, they stood out in my mind. But there's a lot more. If you decide you really want to get into it in a deeper way, you'll find there's much, much more out there than I've covered in this series. So I would encourage you to do some digging. Now, by now, you're very familiar with the word Veritas. You've seen it a lot in every single title of this series. You've seen the word Veritas. You've heard me use it over and over and over. But you may be wondering how I came up with that particular name. It's not a word that's familiar to a lot of people. When we first started the Veritas Club back in 2006, I was a teacher at Tellico Plains High School. And we started this club. A few of us teachers and a group of students would meet before school one morning every week to discuss these things, and we called it the Veritas Club. And by the way, kind of an interesting story. The school mascot at Tellico Plains is a bear, the Tellico Bears. Well, one day, shortly after we started this club, we were announcing it over the intercom that the Veritas Club would meet in the morning, on a particular morning before school started. And one of the girls, a student, one of my co-teachers, Chris Hollinghead, came to him one day and asked, "Hey, Mr. Hollinghead, what's this new Bear Toss Club I'm hearing about? What's the Bear Toss Club?" And I guess she was picturing a bunch of kids getting together and tossing maybe stuffed bears around. I don't know what she thought. It doesn't start with a B, of course. It starts with a V. It's not Bear Toss. It's Veritas. Anyway, I thought that was kind of funny. Anyway, you might be tempted to assume that it's a Greek word. It's a strange word, certainly, but it isn't a Greek word. Turns out it's a Latin word. It's the Latin word for truth. Harvard University is the oldest university in the United States. And the motto for Harvard University is Veritas. That's why we picked it. Of course, they established that as their motto many, many, many years ago, when they still believed in truth up there at Harvard. Actually, it's not the whole motto. Their whole motto is not just the word Veritas. It's a Latin phrase. Again, not Greek, but Latin. And the phrase is Veritas Christo et Ecclesia. Veritas Christo et Ecclesia. And it means the truth about Christ and the church. Isn't that fascinating? The truth about Christ and the church. Now, if you've been in church for a while, you've probably seen that word ecclesia. It's the Latin word ecclesia is straight from the Greek word, which is pronounced ecclesia. But obviously, the Romans got it straight from the Greeks. Ecclesia is usually the word translated church in the New Testament, the Greek word. So Greek and Latin look alike there. So Veritas Christo et Ecclesia means truth about Christ and the church. Think about that. We're talking about Harvard University. And for many, many years, it's been one of the most secularized institutions in the world. Truth about Christ and the church. Isn't that amazing? It's a picture of what's happening to our country. Harvard's definitely fallen from a great height, but so has our whole nation. That could have been maybe a motto for the whole nation at one point in time. So when we pick the motto, Veritas, when we use their motto, it's a little like saying, okay, you guys may not like your motto anymore. You may be kind of embarrassed by it. They never say the whole thing anymore. Sometimes you'll see the word Veritas associated with Harvard. But for the most part, they don't even believe in truth anymore. You guys may not like it, but we do. So we're going to use it. Veritas Christo et Ecclesia. Anyway, we started the club in 2006. And the whole reason for doing it was this growing awareness that more and more of our kids were dropping out of church. Not particularly in high school, although that's happening more and more, but especially when they graduated from high school, and especially if they went off to college somewhere. Now, I know that many of them do eventually come back. Some of them come back to the church when they get married and start a family, and they start realizing, hey, I better think about what life's really all about here. But many of them look back later with some huge regrets for lots of lost years when they could have been very productive for the Lord during this high-energy time of their life in their late teens and through their 20s. And when those years are lost, listen, guys, the devil, our enemy, has won a great battle if he can get you out of the battle through your late teens and early 20s and late 20s even. Now, I realize there can be lots of reasons for those dropouts. But at least I think one of the biggest reasons that many young adults drop out is because they never took time to learn how to answer these tough questions that unbelievers often ask. And when they start hearing these questions, young adults who've never dug in a little bit to figure this thing out, they've never been disciplined to study these things, they feel overwhelmed. They feel unprepared. They get defensive. Maybe they get fearful. And that causes many of them just to withdraw into their shells and drop out of church. They're afraid to speak up because they don't think they know any answers. So what I'm hoping and praying for is that through these presentations, more Christians will start learning how to give a reason, how to give an answer for the hope that's in us. Give answers to those tough questions. We need to know, why do we believe what we believe? And how do we know it's really true? We need to have those answers, guys. At the very least, we need to know that the tough questions really do have good answers. Even if you've forgotten how to give the answer, you need to know, I know there's an answer out there. God has left us answers. He's given us some awesome evidence. And it's really important to know that, to know that God's given us the evidence, even if you can't remember off the top of your head what it is. This presentation is concluded in the video entitled Veritas 2020, number 25, Why Veritas, Part 2, The Biblical Basis.